Welcome to MoneyWeb Now. Business news every morning.
It's Thursday, 21 July. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb studios in Houghton, Johannesburg. On the show today, Lon Robin Mokabela. I'm going to touch on that Nedbank update. It was a bit light on details, and of course there's some base effect. And Arsenal Metal also came out. Really good update, but worried about the future, much like BHP earlier in the week. Tertia Jacobs from Investec. We had inflation yesterday. We've got the Monetary Policy Committee rate decision later today. 0.5%, 0.25%, 0.75%. Keith McLachlan talking around one of his preferred offshore stocks, Levi Strauss. We chatted about a year ago to him about it. Results just came out. Not a bad set of numbers. This show is brought to you by Stanlib. Visit stanlib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. Morning headlines for MoneyWeb. Crypto crash has exposed the need for regulation. Agreed, but of course part of the whole thing of crypto is it's unregulated. It's going to get regulated. We'll see how it goes. I mean, it's going to be a process. It's going to take some time. Everyone I speak to locally, Revex, Luno, they all agree that there needs that regulation. Business day, spike in prices may tilt Reserve Bank towards faster interest rate tightening. That 7.4% in June inflation up from 6.5% in May, way worse than markets expected. Morning markets in the U.S. last night was green. S&P up 0.6%, NASDAQ up 1.6%. Asia's red, but a tiny bit. We got Sydney off 0.04%, Tokyo off 0.08%. So literally a couple of points each. Overnight commodities, all red. Gold, $1,708 an ounce. Brent, $106.32 a barrel. Platinum, $839 an ounce. And palladium, $1,873 an ounce. Rand, 1714. Top 40, opening call for a red open, 480 points to the downside. That's about 0.85%. That as Tencent trades down 2.33% in the Hong Kong lunch break.
MoneyWeb Now, on the money. Also available on podcast.
Training now with Lonwabo Nakabela. You find him at Perpetua Investment Managers. Lonwabo, appreciate the early morning. The Nedbank update, very little detail. Basically said headline earnings per share expected 23 to 28% higher. There's still some base effect here, of course, because this would have been compared to the first 6 months of 2021. We still had some lockdowns. We still had some, you know, we were sort of middle of the pandemic or maybe just past the middle. Your take on Nedbank, on banks generally, they've come out of the pandemic fairly solid.
Hi, good morning, Simon, and good to chat to you again. Yes, that's correct. I mean, there definitely are base effects with that Nedbank number, but it looks like, you know, if you analyze those results, they'll be back at the pre-pandemic earnings. Mm-hmm. By the end of this year. So yeah, they have recovered quite well, and I think really our banks are benefiting from two things: is that they did take, the first one being that they took significant provisions during the pandemic, and actually things have turned out to be a lot better. So, you know, the bad debt charge that they're currently experiencing is at the lower end of their through the cycle range. I think that's pretty much broadly what they've all been roughly guiding towards. I mean, First Rand actually was the most aggressive in taking those provisions. And we can see, you know, some data that those are rolling off, so that probably will also benefit their earnings. And then I'd say the second trend our banks actually benefit from is rising interest rates. So some of their loans are funded by deposits and shareholder capital that doesn't reprice as interest rates go up. You know, so their margins actually improve when interest rates go up. Nedbank in particular is most geared to this effect of the kind of traditional banks. So that also will then be a big driver of earnings. I mean, when you look at our banks, I mean, they all trade, I think, on something like 6 to 10 times earnings. So yeah. I guess the market is questioning the sustainability of these earnings, or whether or not higher interest rates will ultimately result in bad debts, which typically tends to happen. I mean, we think that they still have a little bit of time, primarily because consumers and businesses actually de-geared, you know, over the last couple of years. So there's not as much debt as there was in the systems. So I think there's a little bit more capacity for people to, you know, to absorb the first bits of the rate hikes.
Yeah, I take your point. And our banks are solid, but the market wonders where they're going to grow. A quick second question, Arsenal Mittal, the update, I mean, they're looking to make between R2.61, R2.81. This is the share that's trading at about only three times that, in fact, not even three times that. But what struck me was, much like BHP earlier in the week, the global growth recession fears, and I quote, presents challenges for the outlook of commodities and steel demand in the next 12 to 18 months. The mining stocks, the steel stocks, they are worried about the next year or year and a half?
Yes, I think that's a fair. I mean, I looked at the steel prices. I mean, and they're down 20% from where they peaked, you know, in May. And then, you know, at the other end of the spectrum, they use a lot of energy, obviously, to, you know, to heat up their furnaces. And those prices are, you know, we know what's happened to those. You know, so you can definitely see the margin squeeze, you know, that's coming, and hence the concern around the future. But I think also reading through their statement, you could see that the operating environment in South Africa is actually quite difficult. If, you know, if you throw in the cocktail of strikes, you know, load shedding, the lack of rail capacity, obviously the effect of the floods, you know, it really just shows the conditions, the difficult, you know, conditions that businesses are operating under. Notwithstanding, you know, obviously commodity prices now, that then will add further complexity there.
Yeah, I take that point. It's not just the commodity prices, as you say. It's input. It's the challenges of operating within the broader South African environment. Lwabeng Kubela, Perpetua Investment Managers, appreciate the early morning insights.
We all have different investment needs. Some of us want to preserve our money for retirement, and others to create wealth for the next generation. At Stanlib, we have a team of investment specialists that can help you achieve any investment goal. So whether your money is looking for more certainty, more return, or more impact through your investments, we have a solution for your investment needs, no matter the time horizon. Join us over the next few months as we provide insights into the solutions we offer to meet your money needs. To find out more, visit stanlib.com or speak to your financial advisor. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. License number 719.
MoneyWeb now. On the money.
Chatting now with Tosha Jacobs, Treasury Economist and Fixed Income Analyst at Investec. Tosha, appreciate the early morning. Inflation yesterday for local inflation, 7.4% in June. Well up in the May's 6.5%. It's a high number. It's well out of the 3-6% target band our Reserve Bank has. It's well below what we're seeing in developed markets at 40-year highs. But it still must be of concern to the Reserve Bank and the MPC, who are, of course, meeting later today.
Hi, good morning, Simon. Yes, I think the main concern is, you know, how this higher level of headline inflation could translate into high inflation expectations, you know, that can also drive, you know, wages higher. And that in turn, you know, could potentially, or that raises the risk that inflation can stay higher for longer.
That's a great point, because inflation is so much about expectations. I mean, a big part of this increase was, frankly, fuel. And of course, you know, raising rates is not going to make me drive less. I need to get to the studio every morning. But it does create that expectation, which says to me, well, when I'm talking to my boss, I want better wages. If I'm going to buy something, maybe I should buy it now, because it's going to be more expensive in 6 months or a year's time.
Absolutely. And, you know, this is also what we're seeing, for example, with the U.S. Federal Reserve, with the European, in the European Union, with the ECB. You know, their key focus now is basically to contain inflation expectations. And that is why, you know, there's more like a heavily front-loaded type of rate hiking cycle that they are going to implement.
And then MPC, they were meeting yesterday and today, announcement at 3 o'clock this afternoon from the governor. Your expectation, I mean, they were doing 25 points, and then they did a 50 last time. And now the market's talking perhaps 75. I mean, if you were at that meeting and we gave you a casting vote, where would you cast your vote?
You know, I sit in the markets. I'm in the 50 basis point camp, but you're correct. There's definitely a strong bias, you know, a discussion that it could be 75 basis points. So, you know, in terms of trying to think whether they could go for 50 or 75 basis points, you know, one must always look at the starting point and then what has changed. Because when this rate normalization path started, you know, the Reserve Bank, you know, approached it with that we're going to have a very gradual type of rate hiking cycle, you know, moving with 25 basis points rate hikes at the meeting, spread over, 3 years.
Mm.
Now with this acceleration in inflation, you know, as you pointed out, basically came from fuel and food prices, and the risk of it, you know, turning into high inflation expectations have also forced their hand. So that is why they then decided this month to hike by 50 basis points. So now I'm asking myself now, you know, so this fund loading, is it now shifted to 75? So I think that's going to be very interesting how the governor is going to frame the content in this statement, you know, that they release.
Mm-hmm.
And then also, you know, how they will answer the questions during the Q&A answer after the press conference.
And that's one of the things, as a last question, we can make the argument, and fairly compelling argument, that Federal Reserve, Bank of England, ECB, they perhaps started a little bit late, if we want to be kind to them. Our MCC, our Reserve Bank, they were not late to the party. They started this rising last year. They saw it coming, and if anything, you know, ahead of or at the right point of the curve.
No, absolutely. And I think, you know, obviously, what happened was the invasion of Russia, mm-hmm. of the Ukraine invasion by Russia, just sort of exaggerated some of the underlying dynamics. And, you know, unfortunately, you know, everyone is now forced to respond to that. So, you know, thank goodness that the Reserve Bank had the foresight to start a little bit earlier, and that spoke to the gradual normalization. Otherwise, they may have been forced to actually act even more aggressively.
Yeah, it's at the point, and of course, Russia invading Ukraine did suddenly back in February change anything. Tasha Jacobs, Treasury Economist and Fixed Income Analyst at Investec, appreciate the early morning.
We all have different investment needs. Some of us want to preserve our money for retirement and others to create wealth for the next generation. At Stanlib, we have a team of investment specialists that can help you achieve any investment goal. So whether your money is looking for more certainty, more return, or more impact through your investments, we have a solution for your investment needs, no matter the time horizon. Join us over the next few months as we provide insights into the solutions we offer to meet your money needs. To find out more, visit stanlib.com or speak to your financial advisor. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. License number 719.
MoneyWeb now. On the money. Also available on podcast.
Turning now with Keith McLachlan. You find him, of course, at Integral Asset Management. Keith, appreciate the early morning time. Last year, I'm trying to remember when, I think it was about this time last year, about a year ago, we got you on, you were talking around Levi Strauss as one of your preferred stocks. Results just came out a week, 10 days or so ago. A good set of numbers. I mean, they're seeing input costs, but they're pushing through price increases. Revenue was up 15%. Dividend up 20% at 12 cents. Your take on those numbers?
Morning, Simon. Yes, so I thought the results were really, really good. They reaffirmed their guidance, which is also quite important because, remember, results are historic. Mm. Everyone is very concerned about especially how the consumer discretionary stocks are going to be looking in the next 6 months. But they reaffirmed their guidance, and it's important if you take a step back to understand really what you're investing in Levi's and what they're trying to do. So most people won't appreciate this, but they're over 150 years old as a business, and they're top of mind when we talk about denim jeans. They're top of mind in terms of a global brand. So yet, ironically, because of a little bit of their history, they're actually quite new to the stock market.
Mm.
And what they've been trying to do is really use Nike's playbook and Nike perfected this playbook in the athleisure space. They're using Nike's playbook to really build this company into one of the largest apparel plays in the world. And Nike's playbook is quite simple. You take an excellent brand, Mm-hmm. In Nike's case, that's Nike. In Levi's case, that's Levi. You build a global business, so you grow globally everywhere in the world because this brand is readily accepted. You then take that brand and you expand into other product categories that are related. In their case, 75% of their volume comes from bottoms. They are growing tops, they're growing footwear and accessories, they're growing into a range of other things. And importantly, also, you build direct to consumer channels. So your omni-channel is absolutely wholesale and everything, but direct to consumer allows you to capture the retail margin as well. So you actually lift your own margins. Nike's done this, it works, except Levi's is doing this in the casualization space. And in the casualization space, ironically, you've had huge boosts from the pandemic. Work from home, and now we tentatively all going back to the office. And let me phrase it this way. When was the last time you bought a suit, Simon?
I don't wear suits anymore. I mean, I used to wear suits. I used to wear them every Friday for TV and for events and other dates. And I just don't wear suits anymore. And frankly, I don't think I will. And I hate that word casualization, but it's completely true. There was a tweet that you retweeted, from the CEO and the president. And he makes the point that, you know, CEOs are just so happy that staff are back in the office. They don't care what you wear. And even bankers are letting their staff wear jeans, which when you and I were on a trading floor, was unheard of.
Definitely. So there's not just in the pandemic, there's been some pant size changes. So there's a wardrobe refresh cycle happening in the background. We're not even going to touch on the fact that denim jackets are apparently coming back into fashion. Okay. And I'm the last one you should ever talk to about fashion. So I don't make those calls. But more importantly, the casualization trends are real. You know, 20 years ago, we'd wear a suit and tie to the office. Then 10 years ago, you could drop the tie and it was just a suit. Now you can even drop the suit and just turn up in jeans and shirts. So they're really playing into great tailwinds. At the same time, they're executing on their strategy. It's a wonderful, wonderful business. Over 150 years old with an absolutely Goliath brand right at the center that they're building out. And then, by the way, you can buy this on 11 times multiple, mm-hmm. whereas Nike is trading on a 28 times multiple.
Yeah.
It's just so cheap for what they're getting right. And the future's looking really, really good.
Yeah, and I mean, Nike's done it. Levi's still got to do it, but they are doing it. You mentioned margins. I mean, gross margin, and I know gross might not be the best margin in the world to look at, but it's a good 58.1%. I mean, that is just an insane number.
It's strong, strong core profitability. And gross margin is really a good reflection of your pricing power, not your volumes.
Yeah.
Volumes come through in your operating margin, but your pricing power, which means, and by the way, Levi's Trust has also gone through a global strategy of diversifying their supply chain pre-pandemic. They did it because of the trade wars. Mm. They had a large amount of products coming in from China, and they say, well, this exposes us geographically if something goes wrong. And now they have no more than 20% of their product coming from any single country on planet Earth. This is well ahead of the pre-pandemic, which really set them up nicely. So at the background, they've also diversified nicely. They've got the pricing power, they're growing the volumes, they're doing everything right. I think everyone, though, wants sexy businesses in tech changing the world, and they forget to look at the fact that everyone changing the world needs to wear a set of pants. That's quite important. And I think Levi's is in a great space, great team. They're executing. They are probably, they can carry on doing this for the next 10, 20 years. There's no reason why this sort of growth is over in the short term. I think they've got a very long runway.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. Absolutely. And those results, I mean, the margin numbers just giant. Keith McLachlan, Integral Asset Managers, appreciate the early morning. That's it for today. Our poll today is chatting there with Tertia and asking you what you expect from the MPC. Are we going to see 0.5%, 75 points, maybe 0.25% to try to protect inflation? I agree with Tertia. I think it's going to be 0.5%. We will see. We're not behind the curve. Yes, looking at you, ECB, BOE, Fed and the like, I think we can get away with 0.5%. And our poll yesterday, chatting with Derek Jensen from Rensburg about that BHP group update, asked is the run for mining stocks over. And the three quarters of you said, nope, they'll be back. And that's where Derek sits. He said absolutely. He thinks that they're pretty much at the bottom of the range and pricing in a future which is probably not as bleak. A quarter of you said, no, it is done. It is over. Have your vote. Have your say. Twitter and LinkedIn. This show is brought to you by Stanlib. Visit stanlib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. We're live every weekday morning on the MoneyWeb website and the app, 6:30 a.m. and podcast available just after 7. Thanks to my team, Eddie, Nobuchle, Nicole, Tetso, to you for listening, my guests for their early morning time. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again tomorrow. We're talking the Great Resignation. Is it happening? And what's the impact?
Listen to the live stream of MoneyWeb Now at the same time every weekday. For more business, finance, and investment news, MoneyWeb Now on the money. Also available on podcast.